Hi, welcome to the Fryhof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky with the 12-minute shiur number 45 on the Halakha of War. We're using a source sheet that you can download from our website. That's www.fryhofinstitute.org/podcasts. We're recording this shiur in October 2023 in the wake of the murderous attack by Hamas terrorists upon Israel on Shmini Atzeret Simchat Torah. Unhappily, it is an appropriate time to be thinking about the topic of war in Jewish law. This shiur is devoted to two specific subjects under that rubric. First, does the halakha distinguish between a just and an unjust war? And second, what is the duty of a belligerent power with respect to non-combatants, so-called innocent civilians, in its conduct of a war, even when that war is morally justified? One word of caution. While our sources may address these questions, their language presumes an ancient biblical context. They speak of Malchei Yisrael and Malchei Beit David, the biblical kings of Israel. Or perhaps they speak to a future messianic kingdom. Whether they are relevant to the context of a modern sovereign state is questionable, and we'll take that up later. While we obviously can't cover any of these topics in depth, their importance means that we'll need to extend this shiur beyond its usual 12-minute limit. The first question, then, concerns the justification for war. The classic Jewish discussion of this question begins with Mishnah Sotah, Chapter 8, Mishnah 7. That's on line 3 of the source sheet. The first six Mishnayot in the chapter, Chapter 8, discuss the Torah's rules concerning exemptions from military service found in Deuteronomy Chapter 20. Mishnah 7 asks, Bameh Devarim Amurim, to what does all the above, that is, all these exemptions, refer? And it answers to a case of milchemet harashut, voluntary wars or wars of state. The word reshut means voluntary, something that's non-obligatory, but it can also refer to the government, the ruling power. So we might call a milchemet harashut a war of choice, fought for raison d'etat, the national interest. Deuteronomy's exemptions from military service apply to that kind of war. Aval b'milchemet mitzvah hakol yotzin afilu chatan michedro v'chala michupata. But in a milchemet mitzvah, a commanded war, all must mobilize, go out to the front, even a bridegroom from his chamber and a bride from her canopy. That last phrase taken from the prophet Yoel. Now, on line 5 and line 11, we have the dissenting opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. He holds that the exemptions to military service apply to a milchemet mitzvah, but do not apply to a milchemet chovah. So, what's the nature of his machloket, his disagreement with the Stam, the anonymous opinion in the Mishnah? The Talmud in Sotah 44b, that's on lines 18 through 28, offers two answers to this question. Rav Yehuda says that it's simply a difference in terminology. What the Stam Mishnah calls a milchemet harishut, a voluntary war, Rabbi Yehuda calls a milchemet mitzvah, a commanded war. And what the Stam calls a commanded war, he calls a milchemet chovah, an obligatory war. But Rava says that the dispute is over substance and not merely over language. He puts it this way. Milchemot Yehoshua lichbosh divrei hakol chovah. Both sides use the term obligatory war to describe the wars that Joshua fought to conquer the land of Israel. They're obligatory since God explicitly commanded Joshua to fight those wars. On the other hand, Milchemot Beit David l'Rivacha, Divrei HaKol Reshut. Both sides would define the wars fought by the Davidic kings for territorial expansion as voluntary. Where they disagree is over wars fought lima'utei ovde kochavim dela lete alaiho, to forestall attack from other nations by fighting them now, literally reducing them before they can defeat us. We're going to call that a preventive war. Rabbi Yehuda calls that a milchemet mitzvah, and the Stam calls it a milchemet harashut. So, what's the halakha? We turn to Rambam in his Mishneh Torah in Hilchot Melachim. That's lines 31 through 39. En hamelech nilcham techila ela milchemet mitzvah. The king's first duty is to fight a commanded war, or perhaps more precisely, before the king is permitted to fight his own dynastic wars of state, he must first fight milchemet mitzvah, wars that we are commanded to fight. Rambam cites three examples of milchemet mitzvah. Two are explicitly mentioned in the Torah, the war against the seven Canaanite nations and the war against Amalek. The third example is Ve'ezrat Yisrael mi'atzal sheba alehem, the war to defend the Jews against enemy attack. An example that Rambam derives from a discussion in Tractate Erevin 45a that deals with military action on Shabbat. Rambam codifies this example in the next text from his Hilchot Shabbat, the chapter that treats the rules of Pikuach Nefesh, setting aside the laws of Shabbat in order to save life. We're on lines 44 through 54. Notice that we do not transgress the Shabbat prohibitions in order to fight an enemy who besieges us merely for economic or monetary reasons. But when the enemy threatens to kill the inhabitants of a town, we do set out to defend it on Shabbat. And see line 45. Uva'ir hasmucha l'sapar, afilu lo ba'u ela al iske teven v'kash, yotzin alehen b'klei zayin u'michalalin alehen et ha'shabbat. And line 50. But if the town lies on the border, we carry our weapons and violate Shabbat to defend it, even if the enemy has come for nothing but straw and stubble. Rashi's comment to the Erevin passage begins on line 59 and explains the special sensitivity of the border area as the country's first line of defense. So, let's summarize. In Rambam's understanding, wars fought for the purpose of communal or national defense, as well as wars fought even against minor enemy incursions on border settlements, those wars fall into the category of milchemet mitzvah, commanded wars, which take precedence over Shabbat and for which the whole nation mobilizes. Such wars are morally justified. Now let's get back to that question of context. It is true that these sources are anachronistic. They assume the existence of institutions that are long gone, like, well, the Davidic monarchy, the prophets, and the Sanhedrin. But we would argue that in a moral sense, these texts do speak to our time. For example, the term milchemet mitzvah clearly fits a war of defense, because the first duty of every sovereign state, a duty that for Jews even overrides Shabbat, is to protect itself and its people from enemies who seek their destruction. Israel's wars against Hamas obviously fall into this category. Meanwhile, the term milchemet harashut, voluntary wars, or wars of state, that term denotes those wars that we in our time would likely consider immoral and unjustified. An argument to this effect can be found in a tshuva of the CCAR Responsa Committee from 2002. You can find a link to and an excerpt from that responsum on lines 67 through 85. Finally, there's that preventive war, you know, the war fought to defeat another nation now before it grows strong enough to defeat you later. Remember that in Tractate Sotah, Rava interprets Rabbi Yehuda as calling such a war milchemet mitzvah. But Rambam omits any mention of preventive war from the text in Hilchot Melachim that we read, presumably because Rabbi Yehuda is a minority opinion and the halakha follows the majority. This would mean that preventive wars are not morally justifiable. On that score, the 2002 CCAR responsum draws a careful distinction between a preventive war and a preemptive war. A preemptive war is fought not against a nation that may someday turn out to be an opponent, but against a nation with whom you already have hostile relations, which is clearly arming itself and getting ready and prepared to attack you. To strike first, that is, to strike preemptively against such a foe, not only makes tactical sense, it quite likely will lead to a shorter war and reduce losses to both sides, that would occur in a protracted struggle. We don't know at this juncture whether or just how Israeli military intelligence failed to pick up signals of the impending Hamas attack of October 7, 2023. But had they acted first, had Tzahal, the Israel Defense Forces, struck the assembled Hamas terrorists before they had a chance to breach the security fence, that obviously would have counted as a preemptive strike, an entirely defensive move, a justifiable milchemet mitzvah. So let's move on to our second subject, the duties that halakha imposes regarding the protection of non-combatants, even during a morally justifiable war. The sources, unfortunately, do not discuss this in detail, but we get a sense of how they approach it in the halakha brought by Rambam in the text beginning on line 90. Kishetzarin al ir letofsa, ein makifin ota me'alba ruchoteha, ella mishalosh ruchoteha. When the army besieges a town, they should not surround it on all four sides, but on three sides, allowing all who wish to escape and save their lives to do so. While the Torah doesn't say this explicitly, Rambam tells us that the source is a midrash on Numbers 31, verse 7. Vayitzbu'u al Midyan ka'asher tzivah Hashem et Moshe. The army campaigned against Midyan as, that is, in the way that God commanded Moses. So Rambam says, Mipi Hashmua Lamdu, the rabbis received the tradition that this, letting the people escape, is what God commanded Moses. So, concern for innocent civilians trapped in a siege is obviously a given. We don't want to hurt them. We must offer them a chance to evacuate. This is precisely what Israel is doing when it tells the residents of the northern part of Ritzuat Aza, the Gaza Strip, to move south. And of course, it is precisely the opposite of what Hamas does and did on October the 7th. Their goal is to kill and kidnap civilians, women, children, the elderly, the disabled, none of whom in their eyes is innocent, and none of whom apparently deserves a chance to flee. At the same time, the Midrash and Rambam's Psak Halacha tell us by implication that the protection of civilians is not the overriding goal in warfare. In halachic language, we might say that it isn't doche et hakol, that it does not take precedence over every other obligation. Even when you provide an avenue of escape, not all civilians will be able or willing to evacuate. Some will remain in harm's way, and crucially, the war does not stop on that account. On the contrary, if the war is morally justifiable, if it is a milchemet mitzvah, then it is our duty to fight that war despite what we euphemistically call collateral damage to non-combatants. Take a look at the statements beginning on line 101 by two Israeli rabbis who were affiliated with Hamachane Hadati HaLeumi, the so-called religious Zionist movement. Rabbi Shaul Yisraeli was one of the outstanding halachic thinkers of that movement. Rabbi Shlomo Gorin was a chief rabbi of Tzahal and an Ashkenazic chief rabbi of the State of Israel. Both of them, each in his own way, make two essential points. First, we should do what we can to protect non-combatant populations. And second, that protection should not be allowed to jeopardize the military mission. Look at the highlighted words in the Yisraeli passage, lines 104 and 112. We must not harm innocent civilians lachatchila, in principle, that is, as a stated objective of our military operation, and bechavana, intentionally. Which, of course, means that should civilians be killed or injured bidi'avad, as an after-the-fact, unintended, though unavoidable, consequence of our military operation, that fact does not render the war immoral or unjustifiable. Indeed, he emphasizes that it is the enemy who bears the responsibility for those civilian deaths. Now, that may be easy for him to say, but it would be especially true of Hamas in this case. Hamas is an enemy who purposely, with kavanah, attacks and murders Israeli civilians, and who places their military installations in the midst of their own civilian populations, effectively using their non-combatants as human shields. Rabbi Goren, for his part, states clearly that it is asur, forbidden, to attack non-combatant populations. He also emphasizes that those wars in biblical times that supposedly involved the killing of an entire enemy population do not and must not serve as a precedent for the conduct of war in our own day. This is a critical point, because it is we, the interpreters of our texts and sources, who ultimately decide what our tradition teaches us. It is possible to learn awful, terrible, even bloodthirsty things by drawing analogies to passages in our sacred texts. It's possible, but not obligatory. Thankfully, Goren refuses to do that here, and he beseeches us to follow his example. Wonderful, great, but, again, look at the highlighted sections. Lines 120, 126, and 127. Goren says we must refrain from harming civilians, ella, except, bazman shekayam hechrach lahagana atzmit letzorech kibush ulanitzachon, when one must defend oneself for the purpose of conquest and victory. The war must be prosecuted. The morally justifiable goal of victory to defend our people must be achieved, even at the cost of unintentional harm to civilian populations, especially if we've given them fair warning and allowed them an avenue of escape. Our final text is an excerpt from Ruach Tzahal, the ethical platform of the Israel Defense Forces. The text describes the principle of Tohar HaNeshek, the purity of arms. It, too, enjoins the Israeli soldier to do no harm to non-combatants. At the same time, in lines 137 and 141, it declares that the soldier's task is Bitzua HaMesima, accomplishing the mission, that is, the military mission of defeating the enemy and protecting the nation. Obviously, trying to uphold simultaneously both these principles, Tohar HaNeshek and Bitzua HaMesima, can create a conflict that cannot easily be resolved. Well, our purpose here has been to underline that conflict, not to resolve it. We've seen that Halakha regards a war of self-defense as Milchemet Mitzvah, a commanded war, a war we have to fight, a morally justifiable war. We've also argued that the tradition demands that we do what we can to avoid harming civilian populations during warfare. However, as long as we do that, as long as we do not intentionally attack civilians, and as long as we allow them a reasonable opportunity to escape the fighting, we are permitted, indeed, we are required, to prosecute our Milchemet Mitzvah, even if civilians are killed or injured in the fighting. That conclusion may sound harsh. All of us are moved by the images of civilians suffering in Gaza as a result of the war. Nobody wants to harm innocent civilians, and we wish there was a way to spare all of them during the current fighting. Clearly, the best solution would be to end the war, but ending the war does not mean unilateral surrender. Until war itself is a thing of the past, until all peoples agree to lay down their arms and forswear violence as an instrument of policy, it would be suicide for any one nation, for Israel, for example, to refuse to defend itself, even though that self-defense will exact a terrible price. And Israel must not commit suicide. This has been the 12-minute shiur number 45 from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. Thanks for learning with us. Lehitraot.